Want to have your own business but don't want to start from scratch? Franchising might be the answer you're looking for. Welcome to the Level Up with Nick Lopez Show, the show that brings you thought leaders in business, franchising, and high-performance personal development. Whether you're a buyer, seller, franchisee, franchisor, or consultant, find everything you need to know about franchising right here. Own a business without the pain and financial losses that come with creating it. Find the time, freedom, and financial independence you can have through entrepreneurship. Learn how franchising can help you get there. Listen up and get ready for another episode of The Level Up with Nick Lopez Show.
Welcome to The Level Up Show with Nick Lopez, where we have the absolute pleasure of learning from thought leaders in franchising, business, and high-performance personal development. Today's guest goes without exception, most certainly, is a very talented entrepreneur. In fact, he is the founder of one of my personal favorite brands. And without saying, he has definitely become a great friend and one of my favorite founders of another franchise company. He is the founder of Mosquito Hunters, Andy Fuller. Welcome to the show.
Thanks a lot, Nick. I appreciate the introduction. Thanks for having me here.
Absolutely. Thanks for being on. Thanks for helping our audience and the business world in general level up through your story and your journey. So definitely looking forward to jumping in and learning about just that. So without further ado, a lot of people hear about franchising and don't necessarily have an understanding for what franchising is, right? They think about McDonald's or some restaurant, and franchising is much more than that. For example, Line Painting, Mosquito Hunters, these are home service companies that you wouldn't necessarily think from first glance that it's a franchise business, but franchising comes in many different forms and businesses. It's definitely a unique way to bring a service and value to the market and to do it in a way where you're in business with other business owners, something that you know all too well. But yeah, I was curious, how did franchising find you?
I was always vaguely familiar with franchising. Like you said, the first thing that comes to mind for everybody when you think franchises, McDonald's. I knew they existed. Like many people, I didn't really realize for a long time the difference between a franchise and a chain. I assumed any business that had one location was a franchise. Obviously, being in the industry, you know that there's a big difference between a corporate chain and a franchise. But how franchising found me was, to answer that, I guess I'd go back to my time in corporate America and just being very frustrated, just with all the things that we know corporate America can be frustrating about, the ways that I really didn't have control over my destiny and my job at this, what I originally thought was a very lucrative opportunity. It was kind of my career path. I came to find instead it was something that was really just kind of disappointing. I knew I didn't want to continue down that path. I had this realization after a few years in corporate America that life is too short. And I need to be doing things that really give me a sense of purpose. I need to be focusing on work that's meaningful to me and is enriching. And I knew that what I wanted to do was own my own business. And I'm just kind of wired in a certain way where I just love to build things. And I knew that I wanted to build something much bigger than me. By then, I understood more of what franchising was a bit. And I knew that franchising meant that if I could somehow start a franchise organization, then I would be working with small business owners all across the country. And that's one thing that I kind of figured out in corporate America. One, I don't want to work in corporate America. And two, I love small business. And I love working with small business owners. For at least my entire adult life, I've always been so fascinated. Anytime I talk to anybody who owns any kind of business, any kind of small business, anything, a company that hangs drywall, a company that manufactures some odd widget that's used for some small component of a vehicle, anything. Like, I've talked with so many different business owners over the years, and every single story is interesting. Not too long ago, I was on a flight sitting next to a guy who worked for a company, or owned a company rather, that made the flavors for flavored vodka. It makes me feel, when I talk to these business owners, that like anything is possible. You can have a purpose doing any kind of type of business, have any kind of widget that can be special in its own way. And it speaks to me some of the best parts of life other than family. It speaks to what's so great about living in our country where there's just so much opportunity. I just love it. It means everything to me. Outside of family, like small business and business ownership is kind of my calling. It's my tribe. And so to go back to your original question, franchising meant that I could work with more small business owners. What I did was I started Mosquito Hunters in 2014 as a means of getting out of corporate America. I did it as a side hustle to start, and I knew that I wanted to start a franchise organization. I wanted to be a franchisor, but I didn't really know what that meant. So I had to get an education on the fly as I was also starting the Mosquito Hunters business and also keeping my day job in corporate America just so I could pay the bills. So I did a lot of late night Google searching. There wasn't really any formal education that I could find at the time how I could formally work my way into the industry. But I did find there was a magazine out there called Franchise Times, which is still in existence. They're still huge in the franchising world. So I found their website. I subscribed to their magazine. First issue shows up at the beginning of 2014. I read it cover to cover. And that was the beginning of my education in franchising. I saw in that magazine, there was an article from Dina Dwyer Owens of Neighborly and of the Dwyer Group. And something caught my attention in that article where I just thought, I need to talk to this woman. I don't know why, but I want to share my story with her. I want to let her know what I have in mind for Mosquito Hunters and just see what happens. So I got on the phone with Neighborly, then the Dwyer Group. I went through some hoops. I eventually got to Dina's personal assistant, who doing a good job as a gatekeeper, had many questions for me, making sure I wasn't going to waste anybody's time. And I explained, I have this company. We're just getting started. We're here in Chicago. I see that there are one or two other players in this space in mosquito control on a national level. And I know that this is a problem. Anecdotally, in my life, mosquitoes have always been a problem. I can't remember how many conversations I've had in my life from people who've been feeling the wrath and scourge of mosquitoes, how it can ruin a good time, et cetera, et cetera. There's a need. The market wants this. I'm already getting a really powerful reaction from our market here locally in Chicago. There's opportunity. There should be multiple players. There will be multiple players nationally in this space. So why not Mosquito Hunters? Why can't we be one of them? That was what was driving me. I ended up getting on the phone with Dina. We had a really great call. It was later in the spring of 2014. And we talked about family. We talked about business. We talked about her journey. It was a really great call. I mean, clearly just an amazing woman. Anybody who's come across Dina and had a conversation with her certainly knows that. And the conversation wrapped up and she said, well, what are your goals? What are you looking to do? I wasn't prepared for that question, but I had a number in mind for that year, what kind of revenue I was looking to do for the Chicago business, because that was all that existed at the time. I didn't formally have a franchise business started. That was still a couple years away. But I said, well, here's the number that I'd like to hit for Chicago. And it was an aggressive number. I didn't really think hard about it when I gave her that answer. It was the actual number. I wasn't conservative. I didn't couch it at all. She said, well, if you hit that number, when you hit that number at the end of the year, give me a call and let me see what I can do to help. So in other words, like in hindsight, she's saying, don't waste my time. I'll help you, but I want to make sure that you're serious. And so I kept that number in mind. It was already my goal, but it was an aggressive goal. And I kid you not, Nick, I came just a few hundred dollars over that goal that year. And so it was October of 2014. I reached out to Dina and I said, hey, remember me? Remember that goal? I hit that goal, which is pretty cool. She said, oh, congratulations. That's fantastic. I have somebody who I would like to introduce you to. He just retired as the CEO of Driven Brands, which includes Maaco and Merlin, Meineke, a number of other automotive service brands. He just retired as the chair of the IFA. And maybe there's a way that you guys can work together. That guy was Ken Walker. So I had a call with Ken Walker the next week. And Ken Walker shortly thereafter became my mentor, taught me so much about franchising in such a short period of time, taught me about an FDD and why that's important and what should be in your FDD and the importance of the IFA. I joined the IFA almost immediately after meeting Ken, started going to conferences and meeting all sorts of people. He connected me with franchise attorney, obviously, to build out an FDD, shared a lot of learnings about the franchisor-franchisee relationship and what's so special about that relationship. It's not a business partnership. It's not an employee-employer relationship. It's not a customer-vendor relationship. If you don't set the appropriate expectations with a franchisee up front, there can be some assumptions otherwise. And so why it's so important to set those relationships up the right way, up front, proactively, on and on. I mean, years and years worth of information and knowledge were shared with me through Ken. And that was kind of my crash course into franchising. So I couldn't formally get an education, but I sort of broke my way in through the bathroom window. And that's how I got started in the franchising space.
It doesn't surprise me that you were reaching out to probably considered one of the most influential people in franchising in Dina Dwyer. And does it surprise me that you were talking about things outside of franchising, like family? And I know Dina's very much a values-driven leader, and I have most certainly been inspired and moved to lead in that way as well. And she has just been so influential in franchising, and what a neat individual to be talking about this idea with, right? And for her to give you that recommendation there with Ken Walker, who likewise is, oh my gosh, an incredible individual when it comes to understanding franchising, having a very successful track record in franchising. And so you didn't necessarily just say, oh, hey, I'm going to franchise and jump in and start winging it. You understood the power of doing it the right way and reaching out, being resourceful, and really establishing yourself as somebody that would do franchising the right way. That's not always the case. And you hear a lot about franchise companies that get into the franchise space and they don't have staying power. And you know, I think a lot of that is attributed to that wing it mentality, and they're probably not in it for the right reasons. You had talked about setting the right expectations, and clearly a lot of this is rooted around staying power and bringing value to business partners over the long haul. And so not a lot of founders or brands are started with that in mind. And frankly, I think they just don't have that staying power. I think there's some pretty crazy stats around like 40% of successful or just businesses in general that want to scale through franchising, 40% don't even award a single territory.
Is that right?
It's crazy. Yeah, it's incredible. And I think a big part of that is not doing it the right way, not being in it for the right reasons. So yeah, Andy, I've always admired you for doing business the right way and being a tremendous leader, but surrounding yourself with tremendous support, which we're going to get into here shortly. But yeah, I appreciate that context around how franchising found you. I am curious though, out of all of the different endeavors that you could jump into, clearly you're struggling with this idea of being in corporate America, as so many people do. And you have this dream of business ownership, entrepreneurship, really the American dream. So many folks, they have that dream, they don't really take action on it. The beautiful thing about franchising is it gives you the ability to jump right into franchising without necessarily taking on the risk and the financial investments that go into starting a brand and scaling it and really getting into the market and competing with established brands. You join a company that has the playbook and the support and the training, everything that a franchise offers. So you get that American dream, but clearly you're in corporate America looking over the fence at the American dream and entrepreneurship, and you took action. And so you could have chose many different avenues, but you settled on the mosquito space. Why?
It's really because it checked the boxes better than any other model could that I was looking at. So I know you and I have talked about this before, but just for your listeners, I did college painting. That was how I paid for my school. I went to Western Michigan. You went to Michigan State. So not too far from each other. So I knew that business. That was my only real firsthand taste of entrepreneurship. Then I graduated college, you know, got a job in corporate America because that's what you're supposed to do, quote unquote. You know, that's, you know, use that degree, whatever. Then I got into it, realized I hated it. I wanted to get back to small business ownership. But that was the thing, is I wanted something that had recurring revenue for me, was the thing. And there's trade-offs with everything. There's never a perfect answer, but I wanted something that was home services, but also recurring revenue. First of all, it had to be home services. I knew that because very low overhead, very reasonable startup costs to get into home services. It gives you a really fat gross profit in just about any home service that's out there. which means obviously you have a better opportunity for a really healthy net profit, but also a big gross profit means you can take some risks. You can take big swings. You can experiment. And that's just the kind of business I like running. I like having that kind of extra runway to play with. But recurring revenue was the thing that really stuck out to me as something that I wanted in this next business. Something where I could build relationships with customers, but then continue to service those customers throughout the year and then year after year after year after that. I wanted something that was in an emerging space too. Something where it wasn't an overly mature industry, something where I could learn enough to be dangerous within a reasonably short period of time, something where I wouldn't be at the mercy of my employees. So I had looked, for example, I looked at like, what about the HVAC business? I thought about that for about 2 seconds. Then I realized I don't know anything about HVAC. And if I want to become an expert in that area, or at least know enough to be dangerous, it's going to take me at least a couple of years of education. I'm going to have to go to trade school or be an apprentice with some other local company. I just didn't have that kind of patience. I wanted something that I could dive into within a matter of months. And the barrier to entry is quite a bit lower for mosquito control. That's something where I could learn enough to be dangerous and not entirely be at the mercy of my employees, where I would just have to take their word for it. Or if this person and that person and this person didn't want to show up to work, I would just be completely out of luck. When you're dealing in a business like mosquito control, it's unskilled labor. That's the term. That's what it's classified as. We have talented people who are in the field for us. But what that means is they're people who have no formal training in mosquito control most of the time before doing this. And so we train them. Our franchisees train their employees on how to do the work. In a lot of cases, they need to get licensed by the state. But in most instances, there are some exceptions in certain states. I'm not going to speak on a blanket statement across all states and all locations, but in most instances, the technicians don't come with pest control experience before. So that was why that was important to me, something where it was an emerging space. I wanted something that provided value to the community, something where I enjoyed it, something where I didn't have to hypnotize myself to talk about it. And mosquito control basically checked all these boxes better than anything else could. From there, took the necessary testing to get licensed and started to build the model from there.
Well said. Oh my gosh, there's so many things I could just dive into that stood out there, but clearly an amazing opportunity that didn't require a lot of barriers to entry and had that recurring revenue, which I absolutely love, and providing a lot of value to people's happiness. They don't have those pesky mosquitoes interfering with that quality time around the campfire as they're trying to enjoy it with family and so on and so forth. And so you met with Dina and she referred you to Ken Walker, and eventually you ended up partnering with a holding company in Happy Nest. And so could you take us down that journey? How did that take place? How did you get introduced to Happy Nest and become a brand under that holdco?
Absolutely. That was in 2016. I got a call from Ken. Ken and I had a really strong rapport by that time. Over the past couple of years, he had been my mentor and we were definitely in lockstep along the way. He reached out to me in September of 2016. It was the month before I was getting married to my wife. And he said, "Hey, by the way, have you ever heard of Lawn Doctor before?" I said, "Yeah, I've heard of Lawn Doctor." So I have a friend who I just had a drink with at some event or another. And I think it'd be a good idea for you guys to talk to each other. And not really any specific agenda, but I think you guys should know each other. You guys actually remind me of each other a lot. I said, "All right, sure." So I got on a call with Scott about a week or so before my wedding. I actually happened to be at a franchise consultant convention at the time. But anyway, I talked to him. It was the first time we just got to know each other. I didn't really know where it was going to go. I just thought Ken said it'd be a good idea. So let's talk. This will be, I know Lawn Doctor. This guy's the CEO of Lawn Doctor. I'll put this guy in my cell phone and I'll just have another friend in the franchise industry. So that'll be cool. And after that first conversation, just came to realize quickly that Scott and I had a lot in common. We saw the world the same way. We saw relationships the same way. We were both pretty ambitious guys, different journeys, different paths. He's from New Jersey, I'm from Chicago. I'm from Michigan originally, but then I lived in Chicago for 15 years now. But we had a lot of things in common and he was ambitious. Like I said, his story is an amazing story. Hopefully you'll have him on your show at some point. His story with his father and growing up in Lawn Doctor is just incredible. You know, his father, Russell Frith, was inducted into the IFA Hall of Fame, which they induct one person in per year. You know, he's up there with like Ray Kroc and Dave Thomas and Conrad Hilton and J.W. Marriott and Colonel Sanders, like the real guy, not the cartoon character, but the actual man, Harlan Sanders. Like these are the people who are in the IFA Hall of Fame. And Russell Fritz, Scott's father, is in that company. So Scott, you know, had a front row seat and was very hands-on through most of his life in the franchising space. So just so much knowledge. You know, he's been the leader now of Lawn Doctor for, I believe, over 10 years. And just really taking that brand into the future. He was very entrepreneurial, but had yet to really start an entity. And over time, I got to understand what he would like to do, leveraging all of the power of a brand like Lawn Doctor, all of the systems that are in place, all of those shared services that could be leveraged for more brands. And he talked about this idea of forming a collective of brands working together that could lift each other up, have a high tide raise all ships. And honestly, at first, I think he and I would both tell you, we didn't know if there was a fit for Mosquito Hunters or not. It really wasn't something that was on my radar. It wasn't my intention to ever build a company that would be a part of anything larger. I thought it would be independent throughout its whole trajectory. Not because I had anything against it. I just didn't know anything about it any other way. I am your classic entrepreneur. You bootstrap things. You just put in the grit. You learn as you go. You evolve. That was the same approach I took into franchising. Kind of to your point earlier, I think that's the approach most founders take when they get into franchising is they built a successful local business and they say, hey, this is great. Why don't I do the same thing on a national level? And those who stick with it realize that it's not the same sport. It's a totally different sport. It's a totally different game. And you need to learn how to play that game because it's not the same thing as just starting up an independent business locally. So anyway, Scott had this vision of creating this collective of brands that were working together, one larger team, and how all these teams, how these brands could help each other. And after he was done describing it, I said, well, it kind of sounds like you want the Avengers, but for franchising. And he said, yeah, I think that's right. It's like the Avengers. And so that's always kind of been what I've kind of compared it to all the way through to this day. It feels like the Avengers. So you've got your Avengers movies that have all the Avengers in them. And then you've got your Black Panther movie and you've got your Captain America movie and whatever. You've got these different series, but then they're all kind of combined together. And you make cameos here and there. And sometimes Iron Man shows up in an Ant-Man movie or whatever, but everything's independent when it needs to be, but then it's collective when it needs to be. That's what Happy Nest has become. But anyway, Scott shared this vision with me as he ended up becoming a mentor for me and really made a tremendous impact on Mosquito Hunters, just in the way he was so generous with his time with me. He'd call me on his way into the office or on his way home from the office and say, hey, what about that one problem you're working on? What happened with that? Or, oh, I had a problem like that before, and here's how I got around it. Or here's somebody I know, I'll introduce you. They might be able to help you with this issue. Just on and on and on. I mean, Nick, you know better than anybody all the new hurdles that you can face day to day, hour to hour when you're a franchisor. And if you haven't done any of that before, it's eye-opening. It's a rude awakening sometimes. And it meant so much to me to have that insight from somebody who's not only smart as Scott, but just as kind and as generous and as thoughtful as the guy is. Honestly, he's just a great guy. Continue to have so much value in our relationship. But after working together and having him be my mentor for so long, I think we both started to see maybe there's a way we can work together and maybe we really should work together. And we have a lot in common, but we also have complementary skill sets. And maybe Mosquito Hunters can be a part of this thing, this larger thing, this Avengers thing. Maybe Mosquito Hunters can be an Avenger. And after going through a lot more of the learning process, we ended up forming Happy Nest. It ended up forming where Mosquito Hunters became part of Happy Nest in May of 2018. So at that point, it was Mosquito Hunters and Lawn Doctor. Since then, EcoMades has come on board. And then the vision is for more home service brands, for more Avengers to join the team in the coming years.
So when you joined, how many locations did you have and how many do you have now?
I had 8 locations, 7 franchisees when Mosquito Hunters became part of Happy Nest. I sold those assets to a company that I own now with Scott and others. Today, we have 130 locations, 90 franchisees. And that's a huge testament to the franchise development team and just the overall happiness structure, the way that all the different departments collaborate so well together. But Eric Martin, who you know, is our senior VP of franchise development. He built the entire Happiness brand dev team from him to a much larger team at this point. all of this has been built on kind of the vision that Eric has laid out for the franchise development team. It's not easy, as you know, to find franchisees. It's not like selling a car. It's like, here's the keys. Thanks for the money. Have a nice life. See you later. Every franchise relationship is like a marriage. And you really have to know each other intimately, and you have to trust each other. You have to listen to each other, and everybody needs to carry their own weight. Both parties need to put in the work every single day for it to work. And so to find, when you think about it, I mean, I step back and think about it, 90 different franchisees that are all aligned with the brand. They're all different. They all have their own stories. They all have their own backgrounds. So many things are different. And yet there are a few key things that are in common, and they kind of fit this mold of what we need in the right kind of business owner. It's actually really remarkable. I don't take it for granted. I know how hard it's been to get to this point. It's been relying on a lot of hard work, but also a lot of intelligent work, a lot of people collaborating and making adjustments on the fly to get to the point to where we are now.
Yeah, no kidding. Yeah, 7 owners to 90 owners from 2018 to 2022. That's pretty incredible. But something that you shared that just really stands out to me is Scott's intentionality around the way that he does business, which is relationally driven. And I know Scott pretty well and have had that impression as well, just how generous he is with his experience and expertise and willingness to pay that forward to people in franchising. Of all industries, I would put franchising up there in terms of the collaboration and in the family culture that makes up franchising. And Scott is at the forefront of that, most certainly.
100%. Yeah, that was the thing you hear people say to this day. And I agree. Like since I joined the franchising industry, everyone is so generous compared to any other industry I've ever seen. But yeah, I would put Scott kind of at the tip of the spear for generosity and just willingness to share his time, because it's certainly valuable information from him and others who've kind of gone down this road before. And you would think people would somehow be putting up walls or saying, well, I don't want to tell you about that, or I'm too busy. And it's really just not what it's like. It's pretty special.
Yeah, it truly is special. And in the fact that Dina went out of her way and then Ken Walker followed suit, and that ultimately led to you developing a relationship with Scott, and that evolved into you joining forces with Lawn Doctor and being the first brand there in that vision for creating holding company of home service brands with like-minded values and way of doing business. And so clearly you mentioned it, right? It didn't come easy, and there's a lot of work and effort in large part on the franchise owner's part, and each relationship's like a marriage. But in one example there, Eric building out the franchise development department, my gosh, I'm sure Happiness has many other departments and leadership team that, you know, like if you would have stayed as an independent franchise brand, you would have been building those departments and your team independently. But as a part of the benefit of being with Happiness, you're leaning on the resources of Happiness. And at the time you had 7 owners, and clearly getting up to 90, there has probably been tremendous value, Eric being one example. But what does that leadership team look like, that support? How have you integrated and grown your leadership team, and then likewise leaned on the Happiness team throughout the past 5 years or 4 years?
There's so many things. I mean, we have a brilliant CFO, Jack Miskin. Our accounting team really helps us move very efficiently. That's not to be overlooked. We built a call center. We call it the Dojo. Our in-house call center launched in 2019. That was no small task at all, but that was a huge advantage of becoming a part of Happiness, knowing that we were going to build this together, especially in a business like mosquito control. It's seasonal. The calls come in really big waves, and you either answer the phone or you don't. And if you don't answer the phone, then you're not going to make that sale. And so it's really important to have a sales team that you can delegate to. That's huge. In the past, I'd relied on some third-party call centers. And when there's not ownership, when you don't have ownership of the call center, your interests, they just aren't aligned. I can understand why from their perspective, but it's really hard to get value, mutually beneficial value from a call center, unless it's one where the company owns it, where the franchisor owns it, in my experience. So that was something that was huge. To this day, the Dojo continues to iterate and provide more and more value. Our marketing team is world-class. I would put our marketing team toe-to-toe with any other franchise concept in franchising. I think we're, if I may say so, if I may be so bold, I think we're miles ahead of most franchisors with what we can offer, the way that we can work with some of the top rated agencies in the entire country, a lot of agencies that aren't even in the franchising space. All it means is our franchisees are that much more efficient with their dollars, and more of their dollars go towards getting more customers and not paying commissions to agencies that are generalists. So I think that's huge. It provides tremendous value to our franchisees. It helps them scale that much faster. The knowledge that we have in a technical director, a guy like Chris Sherrington, who's on our team, Jake Van Leeuwen is a technical specialist who we have. Those guys provide tremendous value to franchisees, just so we don't have to, as a system, start from scratch when it comes to knowledge on mosquito control and licensing, things like that. Licensing, of course, is always the franchisee's responsibility, but we want to have information at the franchisee's fingertips. We can do something like that. All of these things obviously provide value to an owner, but when you put them all together in the aggregate, it helps us attract the highest caliber franchisee, which is kind of in everyone's best interest. A players want to work with A players. Great franchisees want to work with great franchisees. But selfishly, as a franchisor, when we have the highest caliber franchisees, we're going to be able to scale that much faster. We're not in the business of making money on franchise fees. Selfishly, we make money on royalty. So our interests are in seeing our franchisees build really healthy, scalable businesses that they can rely on for years and years to come, because that means we're seeing a royalty revenue as they generate that revenue every year over year. The franchisees are the X factor. And so if we can have all of these tools and have them work and have them provide such a meaningful impact for these owners, we'll continue to attract the highest caliber franchisees. And that's where the rubber meets the road. That's where you get this accretive value of different teams, different brands, collaborating, sharing best practices. There's just no way we could ever have anything close to that independently. So I like being a part of a team. Originally, I started Mosquito Hunters, and they went down the franchising path because I remember I said this to my wife, I want to be a part of something bigger than myself. I want to build something that's bigger than anything that I could ever do. And that's the happiness experience. I'm a part of building something much larger than me. And so I can take pride in all of the things that we do because we're helping each other along the way.
Well said. My gosh, it's definitely not an easy journey as a leadership team of a franchise organization, especially when you go from one specialty or one expertise, like whether it's delivering service for mosquitoes or for painting, and then all of a sudden you're in the business of supporting business owners and franchising.
Right.
It comes with a unique set of challenges and a new set of challenges. And so, oh my gosh, I can see that advantage there and the resources where you don't necessarily have to pull back on some of the projects or departments that you want because of just limited resources or growth. Rather, as a part of being within a holdco or Happiness, for example, you're able to dive right in, build that call center, build out the in-house marketing, and not necessarily partner with a generalist, but have it totally invested in the brand at hand. And so I could see why you guys have done just that, attracted ace owners, which have really boosted the growth. And it's not just about awarding territories. It's about that staying power. I talk about this so much with our owners, the staying power, what things make up that staying power. That's what's important. Is you mentioned a marriage. You know, it's not a 1 or 2, 3 year business. It's a 10-year minimum ideal partnership there. And that requires staying power, and all these resources contribute to that. And clearly ace owners are only going to make that much easier. So speaking of some of the aces in terms of franchise owners, what do you notice as some themes of successful franchise owners? What do some of those aces look like?
That's like the $1 million question. Because when you see it done right, it's like, it should be like this all the time. And there's just nothing better than working with those ace owners. It's the best part of this job, is working with these owners who are so hungry, so ambitious and grinding, putting in the hard work and just kind of making magic. That you lift your head up after a couple of years and you see what you can build, what has been built. And it's very, very rewarding to see that. But it's never one thing. It's always multiple things. I'd say the first is that they're action oriented for sure. It's very easy to have analysis paralysis. We ask our franchisees, starting even at Discovery Day, what is your greatest weakness? I say half the time, we'll hear a candidate say, analysis paralysis is my greatest weakness. And that's okay. I think a lot of us can fall victim to analysis paralysis, meaning if you're not familiar with it, any of the listeners, like when you get caught up reading the spreadsheets and going over the data because it gives you this kind of false sense of comfort. You can have that be your weakness, but be aware that that's your weakness and overcome that weakness. Take action. As a business, nothing happens until something, anything moves. Something has to move. And that starts with the owner. That starts with the business owner. So you have to be action oriented. I would say everybody has a comfort zone. And so best owners are willing to go outside of that comfort zone. I don't know anybody who is willing to do everything. They're comfortable with everything that you need to do as a business owner. There are a lot of proverbial hats that you need to wear, all sorts of different departments that you need to be familiar with, tasks that you need to handle. Eventually, as you grow, you can delegate those responsibilities. But when you're starting as a startup business, somebody's got to wear those hats. And normally that's the owner. And so the best owners are the ones that are willing to wear whatever hat they need to at any given moment and go outside of their comfort zone. That's another one. I mentioned it earlier. The trust is such an important thing. I don't think you should trust a franchise brand when you're going through the discovery process. You know, it's kind of like dating. It's like, trust should be there. That should be the goal in mind, is that you're going to ultimately trust your spouse. You have to trust your spouse for a marriage to work. But yeah, have a healthy dose of skepticism in the discovery process, in the dating process. Ask questions. Talk, validate, talk with other franchisees. Learn what this company is really about. Learn what the leadership team is really about. Scrutinize. Absolutely. Everybody should do that. But that stated, once you become a franchisee and you're in that system, you just have to put your head down and go to work. You have to trust that you have best interests in mind. Both parties have the best interests in mind because it's a mutually beneficial relationship. So the franchisees that kind of jump in and say, I've made the decision. I'm an owner. Let's go. Let's do it. I'm going to follow the model. Those are the ones who end up being happiest with the results. I'd say at the other end of it, the franchisees who aren't as happy with their results, kind of at the bottom end, those are the ones who are more likely to kind of second guess things and say, well, why should I do this? Why is this part of the model? Why is it important that I distribute this many door hangers? Why do we do that? Why should I be investing into my marketing? And the truth is, we can't keep reselling anyone on why this brand is what it is. We certainly communicate all the way through, but once you're in, you kind of have to be in. And that's something the best franchisees understand. And they see the results because of it. I'll say when times are tough, you really get to know what anyone's like. Everybody's a great person on a great sunny day. But when you run into challenges, that's where someone's character is really revealed. And I'd say the strongest franchisees are the ones who do a good job of taking a look at the mirror. Take a look in the mirror and say, what can I do? What's within my control? The franchisees who struggle are the ones who have a harder time looking in the mirror, proverbially speaking, and they're the ones who are more likely to point fingers and say, well, this is that person's fault, and this is this person's fault, and this is the economy's fault. Whatever it is, it's not my fault. That's a really comfortable place to be, but it's a false comfort because it's your business and the results fall back on you as the business owner. And those franchisees who accept that and who focus on the things that are exclusively within their control, who end up being more successful without exception. So I'd say that's one that's really critical. Good communicators are important. When in doubt, over-communicate is one of our core values. We'd rather err on the side of over-communicating rather than under-communicating. I think about that all the time. I think about relationships, and all of life is relationships. Certainly all of business is relationships. That's what business is. It's just a bunch of relationships. And it's people who manage those relationships the right way are the ones who find success, in my opinion. And what are relationships? It's just a series of communications. That's all it is. And so the franchisees who communicate well with their team are the ones who are happier with the results. The ones who play things close to the vest, who for whatever reason just don't feel compelled to communicate, end up not being as happy in the end. I'd say it's important to want to be coached to be a franchisee. Not to say that we have all the answers. We don't. Not to say that the answers are finite. They're not. Things change. Markets change. They will evolve. That's what makes business so fascinating, is that the targets do move. The goalposts will move. But we have gone up and down this hill many, 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 many times. And so we bring that experience to our coaching. And so it's important that a franchisee respond to coaching from the franchisor. We will never coach something just for fun. We'll never coach something just for filler or to give anybody busy work. We coach because we want the best results. I mean, yes, of course, we want to be a great steward for our franchisees. We want them to be happy with the results. We are very appreciative and respectful of the fact that they've invested life savings into this business. But selfishly, we want to make money. We want to make royalty revenue. And if a franchisee is not going to follow the model, if they're not willing to be coached, they're not going to make as much money. So it's not just that they're hurting themselves. They're not really honoring the spirit of the relationship. They're hurting the team overall. And that's not ideal. So this is why it's important that we have franchisees that are willing to be coached. I say that a business owner who only wants to hear the word yes is like a child that only wants to eat candy. Like, it feels good in the moment to eat candy. I have a son who's 4 years old. I know you've got four all kids all under 10. Like, kids love candy. Candy's delicious. I love candy. But if that's the only thing in my diet, I'm going to get sick. Anybody's going to get sick. Same thing with the word yes. If a franchisee only hears the word yes from their franchisor, then they're going to get sick eventually. You got to hear the word no sometimes. You got to hear about ways you can improve and make things better. Similarly, like, just be independent, but not fiercely independent as a franchisee. You're a business owner. You're an adult. Like, you don't need to be babysat. You don't need to have your hand held. But not fiercely independent, meaning like, you're not afraid to ask for help. You're not afraid to rely on your fellow franchisees for assistance. You don't want to put yourself on an island. You want to collaborate and communicate with your fellow franchisees and with your franchisor. And then we're big believers in what we call ground game marketing. So that's executing local strategies for marketing, things like door hangers, lawn signs, et cetera. And so it's really important that all of our owners are willing to just have that work executed, whether they do it firsthand or if they build a team. Those are the things that are so critical just to see your business reach a point of sustainability. Beyond that, it's the franchisees who are really willing to think long-term, who are willing to look not just at next year's numbers, but let's look 5 years down the road. What are you actually building towards? I think the hardest year in business for any startup is the second year, in my experience. The first year is kind of like the honeymoon phase. I'm using like a lot of dating and marriage analogies, but it's kind of appropriate. But it's like, first year is like the honeymoon phase where you're so enthusiastic about this business because it's brand new and it's shiny and you're willing to do a lot of the work. And you've already made this big investment up front and you're not really thinking about other dollars that need to go out of pocket yet. But then when you get into your second year is where it comes time to potentially make reinvestments back into the business. You continue to do the hard work with recruiting and building teams and managing customer expectations and retaining customers and executing your ground game marketing over and over and over again. And it's a grind. And for someone who's not conditioned to business ownership, it can be a little shocking to just see just how long the journey can be. That it is the benefit of business ownership is that you have this asset that you own. And so you're not going to see the full benefit of what you own in your first year or your second year. In many cases, not your third year. Like, the real value, the thing that you can have, something that none of your friends can have who never choose to start a business, that comes down the road as you've built this valuable business with, in our case, recurring customers. And so those franchisees who are really excelling and getting to the next level, they're not just looking one or two steps ahead, they're looking five or six steps ahead. In other words, they're not just looking at next year, they're looking at 26, 2027, 2028. Where am I heading? And that gives them that much more motivation to put in the work in the short term. Those are, I guess, the long answer to your question, but those are the things that are most important to me when I look to a relationship with a franchisee. If they can embody those qualities, obviously, I can never guarantee that anyone's going to be successful. I can never guarantee even that they're going to be happy with the results, but I can say with confidence that a franchisee is significantly increasing the likelihood that they're going to be very happy with the results and they're going to be happy with their investment if they can do all those things.
And clearly, those are skills that are acquired over time. And a lot of them are up front, but I'll summarize: take action, grit, analysis by paralysis, trust, let's go, look in the mirror.
Yeah.
Over communicate, coachable, and having that long-term view. I'll even add one in there, humility. I think humility intertwines with a lot of those, but
I love that.
Along the lines of coachability and understanding that as a franchisor, the playbook's there for a reason and they're never being coached just to be coached to fill space, or as you said, to do busy work. It's in the franchisor's best interest to get results. And as business owners, we want independence. That's what we sign up for, right? Yeah. As a franchise owner. So that's an interesting dynamic in that you're acquiring this independence, but yet still relying on others to learn this playbook and to be able to execute on it. And that requires a tremendous amount of humility. And you mentioned look yourself in the mirror. That requires humility. I think along the lines of what you said is it's easy. It's a comfortable place to say, oh, it's the economy, or it's this employee, or it's this marketing program, or so many different areas. Vendor. Yeah, the vendor is an easy one, right? The vendor got me my marketing stuff late, or it took so long, or XYZ. But really, those are small things that in the big picture, it comes down to execution. And as you said, taking action and grit and that let's go. At the end of the day, the results come from what you can control. And that's the beautiful part of business is, you know, I always say one of the great laws in existence is cause and effect. And in terms of business, it's behavior equals outcome, unless you're doing the wrong behavior. And that's easy to be able to evaluate based on just KPIs. You can zero in on, you know, where am I not getting the results? And then, hey, where am I falling short on the process? And with that adjusted behavior, the outcome will be there. But those things you can control. You can control the behavior, the types of behavior, when you're doing the behavior, that those all are controllable, but absolutely requires a tremendous amount of humility. And I think the more I'm in business, the more I appreciate business owners, leadership teams, folks in business that are humble, because as you said, business is about relationships, and the core of any business or the core of any relationship is humility. Absolutely. So, oh my gosh.
I never thought about it that way. It's a really great way to say it. Humility.
Yeah. It's not always easy, but it's an ace quality. That's for sure. Mm. So Andy, you've been an ace on the show. We are looking to help people level up. And I know this conversation has most certainly helped folks to level up. So thanks for giving us your precious time. Thanks for being on the show.
Thanks again for having me, Nick.
So if anybody is interested in getting in touch with you, how can they do that?
They could send me an email at andyfuller@mosquitohunters.com.
andyfuller@mosquitohunters.com. Check them out on LinkedIn. Check out the Mosquito Hunters website. But more importantly, please subscribe to the Level Up with Nick Lopez show. That's how we can continue to grow and do just this. Help people level up by learning from influencers, thought leaders in business, franchising, and high performance personal development. We covered so many things today. I most certainly have been inspired by Andy's journey, his leadership style, and these 9 tips for ace franchise owners. So drop some comments down below. Let us know your thoughts. Contribute to the conversation. And as always, level up.
Thanks for listening to another episode of the Level Up with Nick Lopez show. Remember, it's never too late to get started on your entrepreneurial journey. Don't forget to subscribe, like, and share if you enjoyed today's segment. Catch us again next week and visit limepainting.com for more of the Level Up with Nick Lopez show.